Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by NatureBox. Order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like coconut date energy bites. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. On this episode of Know How, we're going to show you how to dunk your computer without breaking it. I'm going to unleash the power of your network with some ports. Oh, and by the way, yeah, that's going to happen.
Get to the chopper!
Dylan.
Welcome to Know How. It's the show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, the digital Jesuit.
And I'm Brian, the analog Brian.
So weren't you cranky hippo a while
ago? Oh, right. The analog cranky hippo.
And for the next hour or so, we're going to show you some of the projects that we've been working on so that you could take the information back to your homes and geek out in good form. Brian, before we get to that, you know, here in San Francisco, one of the issues that we have is microclimates.
Oh, absolutely. It could be sunny here in Petaluma and then freaking cold in San Francisco.
Which typically is. I remember, like, because I grew up in the East Bay, and it would be 110 degrees in Fremont in the shade of a hill, but then you'd go to San Francisco and it's like 52 degrees and foggy.
Yeah.
And that's not just that. It's not just, oh, there's San Francisco and everything else.
Right.
There are so many different climates that go from the San Jose all the way up to Petaluma.
Yeah, definitely. Except, I mean, it's the whole coastal region that we have here. Like, the fog tends to roll in, too, really quickly. So it could be nice here, and then you want to go have a picnic, and then it's ruined by the time you get to where your destination.
Right. So. Which we grew up with, so we kind of love it. I mean, it's
we're used to it by now.
We're so used to it. And it's good that you know that if it is too hot in Petaluma, we'll go to a ball game in San Francisco and cool off.
Well, that's why I tend to carry a jacket with me everywhere I go, whether or not it's summer. Yeah, there's one just hanging in the trunk for me.
Yeah. Now, as Eric Duckman is saying, what's up with that? Why isn't the same temperature everywhere? Which is the point.
It's crazy.
But that's the point. When you look at, say, the weather app on your phone, what it's normally doing is it's giving you an average. It's telling you, so if you like put in the zip code for San Francisco, it might give you the average for the region, which is completely not going to be anything near what reality is.
Yeah, it can vary a lot from mile to mile.
It really can. And so a company by the name of BloomSky has decided to kick off a Kickstarter to build a device that could give you the power of weathercasting, local weathercast. In fact, they're calling it hyper-local weathercasting. The idea behind this is it's a little station that's connected to Wi-Fi in your network. Mm-hmm. It goes outside, and it measures the weather, and it includes a picture of the sky.
Right.
Right? And then you share with everybody else who uses BloomSky.
Yeah, it has a ton of little sensors packed into it because it can also do rain, I think, and it's there's like a solar panel attachment you can do for this. And the thing that I love about this is that when I go to ride my motorcycle, some of the best roads are out at the coast. But like I was saying earlier, it could be sunny here in Petaluma, and by the time you get to Point Reyes or something, it's foggy. So if I could just look that up on a webcam or something.
Map out your track so you know, it's normally at this one spot. Yeah. I really am going to need a jacket because it gets down to 20 degrees.
Should I go as far as Bodega? No, because there's fog there. But everything's great south of that. So,
Well, I mean, it has, as you said, it has multiple sensors. It's got a humidity sensor. It's got a temperature sensor, barometric pressure, UV exposure levels, and, of course, precipitation.
Right.
And it goes for 20 days on a charge or, as you mentioned, you can get a solar panel attachment so that you can run it indefinitely.
Which is super cool.
Yeah. Now, here's my favorite part. This is actually the reason why I would get it. The hyper-local weather, that's cool. That's fun. That's okay. But the thing I really love, and Alex, if you could switch to this, it does time lapsing. So if if you wanted to, you could set this thing up so that it would record a time lapse of what the day looked like over your house, and it will turn it into a little movie, and then you could share it. You could just send it off to your friends and say, hey, this is what it looked like over where I was. It was sunny, a little bit of clouds. It looked beautiful.
Well, it's always a good conversation starter, right? Like, oh, this is what the weather's been like. How's the weather been for you?
Yeah.
Here's a time lapse.
Yeah. I kind of like stuff like this, right? It's just geeky.
It is. The only limitation I see to it is that it has to be on Wi-Fi. Because some of the places that I want to know what the weather is kind of remote. Some of those places out at the coast, there isn't a Wi-Fi connection that you can connect to.
Yeah.
It's neat.
It's a neat product. And I think the reason why they went with the Wi-Fi is they wanted to keep the cost down.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If they were to do some sort of like over... 3G or something like that.
Then you have to pay a monthly subscription fee, and the device will be more expensive.
Yeah.
Pain in the butt. But I would say that this could be the start of a trend of devices, at least here in the Silicon Valley. This is such a good idea. I'm sure people are going to say, what else can we measure locally? What else can we build really cheap devices, inexpensive devices, and mount them everywhere we live and we work, and we gather data that we use as sort of crowdsourced forecasting.
Yeah. Crowdsourced data, just getting from different sources all over, especially in an area like this that has such microclimates and stuff like that. And I mean, the Bay Area is kind of tech oriented, so I could see people just wanting to get this and put it in their backyard and stuff like that.
I would get it just for the time lapse.
For the time lapse feature?
That's cool.
Take that out.
Time lapses. I'm a big fan of that.
Take it out somewhere and then set it up and just leave it and come back for it in a little while.
Now, disclaimer. One of the people who work for BloomSky is actually the fiance of Tony Wang, who is an editor and a producer here. We don't want to mislead anyone. Mm-hmm. He didn't bring this to us and say, can you do this on know-how? I actually found it, and then he said, oh, by the way, you know that my fiance works for that company. So, it's I like stuff like this.
Yeah, it's not a shameless plug, but even if it was, we'd still think it was cool.
Yeah, and I'm not above shameless plugs.
Absolutely not.
But you know what isn't a shameless plug?
What's that?
Eating.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Snacking?
I'm big on snacking. Well.
Well. For both of us.
Well, okay, but for different reasons. For me, obviously, because I need to lose a little bit of the weight, and I probably like the chocolate and the sweets a little too much.
Yeah, but if there'd be less of you to love, Padre.
Okay, thanks for saying that. I do appreciate that. But for you, it's because you need to eat healthier, right?
I do. I have to be careful about what I eat, because I'm a type 1 diabetic, and so I get very tempted by some of the other snacks that we have.
Probably because I keep putting it on your desk.
That does not help. The brownies that I find under my seat are not my friend, Padre.
Well, because I wanted to do a know-how to stab someone with a EpiPen, or what would it be?
Yeah, like you want insulin? Me to go to a sugar coma.
I saw Hansel and Gretel. You used to have a needle, and you shove it in your leg. And
it totally works that way. Yeah.
No, but we're not talking about needles. We're talking about something natural.
Something more tasty than
Nature
needles.
Nature Box. Now, we've had Nature Box on the network for a while, and they've kind of taken over our snack room. If you go into the back room of Twit and you go into our kitchenette, you'll see that where we normally had chocolates and a lot of sweets, in fact, I think gummy bears were there for a while. We've now replaced them with these nature snacks. Now, they have no trans fats. They're actually quite good for you. One of the things I really like about Nature Box is the fact that once you sign up for the service, you get to try a bunch of different things. Things that I didn't know I would like. Like, for example, my personal favorite right now are these Santa Fe corn sticks. In fact, I don't think we have
probably
any.
Ate the rest of them.
Pumpkin seeds are also really, really good. These are things I wouldn't try on my own. I would never actually go and say, hey, can you give me a bag of pumpkin seeds?
No.
But thanks to Nature Box, I know that they're actually delicious. And they're, if I'm going to choose between eating chocolate or eating this, I would much rather eat this.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and open some of that up. Now, Nature Box is a service that sends these snacks right to your door. So you don't have to go out and get it. You don't have to order it every single time. You tell them what you like, and they'll suggest things for you. They'll allow you to create the perfect snack box. Here's how it works. You go to naturebox.com/twit, and you click the Continue button to choose between three subscription options. Then you place your order. Once you're a member, you can select which snacks you'd like in your monthly box. And believe me, you're going to want to try them all. You can select by dietary needs. So, for example, vegan, soy-free, gluten-conscious, lactose-free, nut-free, non-GMO, or fat priest.
Low sugar.
Low sugar. You can also select by taste, which is savory, sweet, or spicy. Now, I never thought about this before. I always thought snacks were you know, sweet. That's what I want for my snacks. But you can have a savory snack. You can have a spicy snack. And I've learned to realize when my body wants each one. And it's normally
You've
not
trained
sweet.
Yourself.
I've trained myself.
And don't limit yourself. You can mix and match. I've done that before. Pour some of the sweet ones into a bowl with some of the spicy ones.
Segregation of the snacks. I don't know what the heck you're talking about.
What?
No. Whatever. You know, Nature Box would not approve.
I do not discriminate against snacks, Padre.
Well, now you can also get a snack guilt-free with things like the coconut date bars. I haven't tried those yet, but I hear they're actually pretty good. Hmm. And their pineapple rings, the dried pineapple rings, exceptionally good.
I never get to try them because...
I took
Wait, do you eat them
they're
all?
In my desk. I took like four packs. Lisa gave them to me, so they're mine.
Great.
Yeah.
So
try it today. Go to naturebox.com and try something out. In fact, if you're going to try it, go to naturebox.com/twit and see if maybe this is going to replace that jar of cookies that Where are you going?
We get to keep this, right?
Okay, we're stopping. Yeah, give me that thing.
What?
No, it's on my side. The jar of cookies, the pantry full of chocolates, pretty much anything that may be bad for you, go ahead and replace it with the Nature Box. Now, make sure to go to naturebox.com/twit and stay full, stay strong. Go to naturebox.com/twit. We thank Nature Box for their support of Know How.
Don't be just hungry for knowledge. Be hungry for snacks.
No, don't be hungry.
Oh, right.
Eat Nature
Kill
Box.
The hunger.
Kill the hunger.
All right. So, what's next, Padre?
So, we promised a little something-something for the folks at home. We promised that we were going to show them how to unleash the power of their networks. Now, specifically, how to access multiple devices behind a firewall, behind a NAT router. This is a pain in the butt.
Right, and this is something that anyone with a router can do, and you have access to a ton of different devices. So, this is pretty neat when you're showing me this.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I know that you've experienced this before because you were trying to do some gaming, and it's difficult because you use DMZ, right?
Yes, which you then told me was kind of a bad idea.
It's kind of a bad idea, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but let me show you really quickly what we've set up here. If you go to the overhead shot, this is actually representing what the... here's some Nature Box for you. This is representing what the internet looks like. We've kind of mocked up. Underneath this desk is a router that's giving us a NAT address, 192.168.1.1. Mm-hmm. That is then going into this. So this is like your home router. The router underneath is acting
like
the internet.
Right.
So we're mocking the internet because we didn't want to show the people our real internet address.
We have to be a little careful about how we do things here. Yeah.
Then we've got two laptops. We've got this laptop right here, which is on the inside of the network. Then we have a secondary laptop here, which is outside of that router. So it would be like on the internet.
Right.
And inside the network, we've got two cameras. We've got this camera and we've got a thermal camera that we'll show you later on. This is what our network actually looks like.
Okay.
So you've got the laptop that's on the internet.
Right.
Then you've got the internet. Then you've got our router, which has an external address of 192.168.1.135. Now, you would never have that address if you actually had an internet address. That's a non-routable address.
Right.
But we're pretending it is.
Okay.
Right?
Makes sense.
Then we've got our router, and on the inside of the router, we have an address of 192.168.200.1. That's
your internal...
Internal gateway.
Right. Okay.
Connected to that, we have a switch... which then goes to the laptop that's on the inside. Mm-hmm. It goes to the visual camera, and then it goes to our thermal camera. And that's at 192.168.200.201 and 200.200.
Now, you went in and you manually set those numbers, right?
Right, yeah. You could make it dynamic.
Right.
I'm kind of an old hat. I like to have things static. And in my mind, I always put cameras. I probably shouldn't have told the internet that. I always put cameras in the 200s.
Oh, okay.
Now if you're ever on one of my networks, start scanning the 200 range.
And you'll be able to spy on Padre.
You'll find my cameras.
So who wouldn't want to see that?
We've got two cameras here. Let me go ahead and load up the other one. 192.168.200.201. Mm-hmm. Alex, if you go ahead and show them, this is the visual camera that we've got. Load it up. I'll go in the laptop on input 10. This is a horrible focus.
Ooh.
Okay, yeah. This one actually has some pretty decent zoom on it.
Okay. We'll
pull it back a little bit. So this is a megapixel camera that I've been running in my lab for a while. Mm-hmm. It's an IP camera, which is kind of cool. So, it's connected via the network.
That's neat.
Yeah. And I want to be able to access this from the outside world, you know? Yeah. Hi, I'm ready.
Hey. Okay, yeah, good.
And then go ahead and go to the other one, which is one, yeah, let's switch to this. This is a thermal camera, yeah, which is kind of cool. This only sees thermal energy. It only sees IR.
Okay.
Which is, actually, let's do something really quick. Because it sees only IR, we can take this can of compressed air, which looks a little bit black.
Yeah, because it's
a
little
cold. And if I do this...
Right into the mic.
I'm suppressing... Oops. Yeah, that's right. Sorry about that, internet. I suppress my thermal image. Here, let me do it here. There's a little bit of...
Keep those pits nice and clean.
Yeah. So this is a camera that only sees thermal energy. We could turn off all the lights. It will look just like... Oh, right into the mic. Good job.
What? Well, do you hear something, Padre?
Is there a clicking sound?
Is there a clicking in the
Put
the
down the gun!
No! If it bleeds, we can kill it,
Padre. They don't hunt you if you don't have a gun. It's not sporting. Did you shoot the camera again?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't supposed to do that.
All right. Okay. So that's not what the episode's about. Okay. We're just having a little bit of fun.
So were you accessing this as if it was on the local network?
Right. Okay. So what Alex connected to was a laptop that's inside the local network. Right. That's why I can see both cameras.
Okay.
The problem is when I want to see that from the outside world... I'm going to have issues. Let's take a look. Go ahead and switch back, Alex, and you'll see this. This is what you might see. This is DDWRT. It's a very old version, mm-hmm. which means all the newer versions have much better interfaces. But if you look up here, you know that I have the external address. My WAN address is 192.168.1.135. And again, I know that that's not a real address. You won't get that on the internet. But we're pretending. And right. if you wanted to hit this router from the outside world, you'd have to type in 192.168.1.135.
Right.
Now, let's say I want to open this up. I want my cameras to be visible from the outside world. The way that you would do it is this. There's normally a setting called Applications and Gaming. And then here, there's a tab for DMZ. Right. A DMZ is a demilitarized zone, okay? which basically means anytime someone hits that external address... 192.168.1.135, it's just going to forward all the traffic to a single device in your network. You can only have one DMZ address. So if I go ahead and enable this, it means that if I type in 192.168.1.135 on the outside network,
it'll forward to that address right there, and
exactly.
then all the ports will be open?
The ports are open for that one camera. Right. So go ahead and switch to my other laptop, Alex. And what you'll see here is this is the laptop that's in the outside world. So I'm going to type in 192.168.1.135. So I'm typing in the address of the router.
Right.
And if I do this, what I get is I get the thermal camera.
Okay.
So I've now opened it to the outside world. Here's the problem. That works.
That works, but it's not secure.
It's not secure. And... I can only do it for one device.
Right. You want to open this up so you can see all your cameras you have hooked up.
All my cameras, or maybe my gaming devices, maybe my storage. Like if I have a Pogo plug that I mm-hmm. want to access manually, maybe a Plex server that I want to be able to access without buying Plex service.
Right.
I would need to open up more than just the DMZ in order to get to all of those. Either that, or I switch the DMZ back and forth manually.
Which is, that's a pain in the butt.
I'm not going
to
do that.
That is so cool. So you don't have to use special software for this. This is like going in manual.
Right. And now I'm going to go ahead and turn off the DMZ. Whoa. And so that's going to die. So there needs to be another way. And there is another way because we have these things that we call ports.
Ooh.
Yeah. So ports are, that's actually what does the heavy lifting. That's how things communicate on the internet. When we think about the internet that we use, there's really two protocols. There's TCP.
And UDP.
And UDP, right. So TCP is it's a session controlled protocol. It's called transmission control protocol. It'd be like, I want to give you data. Mm-hmm. I call you up on the phone.
I answer the phone.
You answer the phone.
We confirm we're talking to each other.
Right. I say, I would like you to call up someone at 555-5555, and you repeat back to me.
You got it, Padre.
Yeah, exactly. So we know that the data has been transmitted correctly.
Right.
Right? There's another protocol called UDP, which is User Datagram Protocol. There is no connection.
That's just you sending information, and there's no confirmation or anything that it was received. It's just
Yep. I bundle up all the data into a packet. I send the packet out in the network saying this is where it should go. And hopefully it got there because I don't check. There is no error correction.
But the advantage of that is that there's not a lot of
overhead.
Yeah,
exactly. Because when you have a session, you have to transfer. You have to communicate back and forth to make sure that the data is transferring and it's not corrupted. UDP is just, hey, hopefully you get this.
So would it work good for video and audio?
Right.
If you lose data on audio or video, it just kind of, there's like a blip.
There's a blip, but you can recover.
But TCP would be better for like a file.
A file. Like, so anything that you can't miss any piece.
Right. And if you don't want your data corrupted.
Right. And it's more complicated than that, but that's essentially what you've been talking about. Right.
Okay.
Now, with TCP and UDP, every internet address there ever was has ports. Specifically, it's a 16-bit address, which means there's 65,536 minus one because we don't use zero. It means there's 65,535 possible ports for UDP and TCP.
Okay.
And when we type in www.twit.tv, the browser uses port 80. That's the port that we use for HTTP for the protocol that's the internet.
Right. Okay. Right?
So you don't have to type that in, but that's what's there. That's actually what gets added in at the end. Here's the thing, though. We can tell browsers and we can tell applications to choose a particular port, and then we can assign that port to a particular device. If you go back to my drawing here, what it means is, even though there's only one address, 192.168.1.135, I can tell the router, if something comes in on port 10,000,
send it to...
Go to there.
Thermal cam.
Oh, if something comes in on port 10,001...
Send it to visual cam.
Go to here. And how it works. That's how a port forward works. Now, let me go ahead and show you. Going back to my first laptop here, I've got a couple of port forwarding rules that are already set up. The first 1,024 ports are reserved. So it's really like 64,500 and some... But, I mean, you still have a ton of ports to play with. Like FTP is port 21, SSH is port 22, SSL is port 443.
Now, really important ones for gaming. This is how I learned about port forwarding, was trying to get my Xbox to work online.
And unfortunately, a lot of people who try to do this, they only forward one port. Xbox uses multiple ports. If you go back to that screen, it's port 88, port 3074, port 53, port 500, port 3544, and port 4500. You'll notice that in protocol, some of these are UDP, some of them are both.
Okay.
Right.
And
so if you look up the specs, they'll tell you what you need. So this is what's called a straight over forward. So I'm forwarding port 21 to port 21 on some machine in the network.
Okay.
And I'm doing that for all of these. But there's another type of port forwarding, which looks like this. So go ahead and, Alex, go back to that computer. I'm going to add a rule, and I'm going to add something for the thermal camera. So thermal. And I'm going to say it's coming in on port 10,000.
Sure.
So traffic that comes in on port 10,000 is going to go automatically to 192.168.200.200, which is the address of the thermal camera. Mm-hmm. But I want it to go to port 80, because remember, port 80 is the web address.
Right? Okay.
Okay, I'm going to save that. And then I'm going to add another one for the visual camera. So let's add one for visual. And this time, I'm going to say port 10,001.
Okay.
And I'm going to send it to 192.168.200.201. And also port 80, because it's the web
internet.
Right. So now that I have this rule set up, let's see how it would work. Let's make sure that this takes. Okay, it's good. Now let's go switch to this laptop. Remember, this laptop is the one that's on the internet. So this can't see anything except what the router is offering it. So now if I jump in here, I go to 192.168.1.135. If I do this, it's not going to do anything. There's no DMZ. I turned it off, right?
Right.
So it's just going to freak out. But if I tell it, go to 10,000. And I can always do that.
The thermal.
Right. If you go ahead and zoom in on that so people see what it actually looks like, Alex.
With the colon, right.
Colon 10,000. Let me go ahead and do that. And now it's going to go to the thermal camera.
What? I hear that clicking noise again. Oh,
run!
Don't pick up the gun.
Get to the chopper. No, okay, but we did this before with the DMZ. But now I can open up another window, and I'm going to type in 192.168.1.135 port, 135 port 10,001. And this gets me to the visual camera.
Just takes a sec to load.
It's going to be a little bit slow. There we go.
There we go.
Yeah. So now I have access to both of my cameras from outside,
my
network.
So theoretically, you could have 6,000 and something.
64,000. It'll be over 9,000.
More cameras than you would ever need to have.
If you have that many cameras in your house, you should seek professional help. Okay. But yeah, this is what you and now here's also a very important point. If you switch back to that first laptop, Alex, we get this question all the time. Minecraft.
Yes.
If you want to run a Minecraft server inside your house, go ahead and zoom in here. You need to put it on port 25565, and you have to port forward that to whatever device is. For example, 192.168.200.
Say that's your gaming
66.
PC.
Right. That's my Minecraft server.
Yeah.
And you'd have to give them the same port. Now this works for everything. We always get people saying, I just set up a NAS in my house. How do I get it from the outside? And they said, do I just turn on the DMZ?
No.
I said, no.
Because
if you do that, you're letting someone from the outside hammer your device on all the possible ports.
Right.
And if something's open, you can take advantage of it.
Right. You were explaining to me, it doesn't matter if your PC has a firewall, that if something on your network gets infected, then it's on your local network.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, with security these days, you're probably going to be okay, but why do it? I mean, why forward all the ports to a single device if you could just give it the ports it needs? Just give it the ports it needs, and then everything else stays closed.
Yeah. That was not as painful as I had first thought. Thank you for showing me that, Andre.
Right. So if you do have a router that has port forwarding, and every router has port forwarding, and you want to access your devices from the outside world, now you know how to do it.
Awesome.
Now, when we come back, we're going to show you a little bit about dunking your computer and letting it run.
That's not a good idea.
Ready?
This isn't happening.
Whoa, that was a good trip.
Wow, okay.
Ooh, okay, yeah. Whoa, everything on the table has changed.
That was quick.
How strange. Yeah. All right, so we're doing a little something. Remember we talked a while ago about Novak, right?
Yes, very expensive.
Very crazy expensive, but very cool for cooling things. It was good at thermal conduction.
Good one.
So what you would do is you would use it in like sealed server racks with a lot of blades to pull the heat away from the components so you could do away with air cooling.
Right. It's completely submerged hardware. And so that's why we bought like 5 gallons of it,
We got
access to Leo's credit card. $4,000
fluid, $4,000 again. No.
Leo was on vacation. Yeah.
We sold his car. No, there have been ways for people to cool with liquid in the past. In fact, this is from Alex's setup.
Yes.
This is some of this Coolance computer liquid coolant. The idea, it's just water. But it has a few additives in here so that it doesn't mold up and
that
so it doesn't gum up.
Full.
I think the key ingredient was glycol.
It's basically
antifreeze.
It's antifreeze.
No wonder it was so sweet.
But then you'd also need things like this. Here, you hold on to this because this thing is that's impressive.
Okay.
That's the radiator assembly. That's how you would get heat out of the system, right?
Right.
So as you're pumping liquid through your devices, and this is how you would get the heat off. This will fit onto the CPU.
Mm-hmm.
It's a water block,
and it would pump the fluid through.
And then it would eventually run through here. So you needed a water block on all the major heat sources. So the hard drives, the CPU, the video card, maybe the graphics, maybe the chipset that's on the motherboard. It's a cool system. In fact, Alex, do you have any pictures?
It's literally a cool system.
I love playing with this stuff when I was still modding. It's fun to play with. It's fun to tinker with. But you experience this. It's a pain in the butt, right?
It is a mess to maintain. And unless you're doing some overclocking, it's not that much better than
practical.
Just using air.
Yeah. Well, and the other problem is you need to have a cooling block on anything you want to cool.
Right.
Because that's how the heat gets removed. And since you don't typically have a cooling block on everything, there's still heat being generated, you still need to have a fan in the case, which kind of defeats the purpose of having liquid cooling in the first place.
So if you wanted to go all out, with liquid cooling, you would just submerge the whole
thing. Right. Which is why we were talking about Novak. Novak could allow us. We could, if you go to the overhead shot, this is a computer that I built over the weekend. If you go to the wide shot, you'll see it's running Ubuntu. It's just playing a little video. It's got barely enough power to do that. This is really some scraping the bottom of the barrel here.
Yeah.
But we could put Novak right into this tub and then put some sort of radiator. Actually, probably the surface area would be radiative enough where we would have to have nothing else. No cooling fans, no nothing.
Hmm. Very cool.
Now, what allows that to happen is the fact that that liquid is what we call dielectric.
Right.
Which means it does not conduct.
Right.
It won't.
Because otherwise, if you tried water, that would just short everything.
It would be the shortest experiment. Actually, if you want to see what happens when you try to cool directly with water, look for Leo Laporte Liquipel iPhone, because that's basically what happened. Now, when we do this with a dielectric fluid, like Novak, which is specifically designed to do cooling, the heat gets pulled away from the components. And because Novak has such a low thermal retention rate. Right. It wants to give that heat back. It wants to give it out. Mm-hmm. So it will conduct it straight off the components into whatever radiator you're using to cool your system.
Right. Transfer the heat away from the source.
Right. Before Novak, there was a fluid also by 3M called Fluorinert.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Actually, Fluorinert. Alex, do you have that clip from The Abyss with the breathing? They used it as a plot point in The Abyss. Fluorinert, you can actually also super oxygenate. You can attach a bunch of oxygen molecules to it, and you can saturate the fluid.
And then breathe
it? Breathe it.
I've seen that.
The Abyss, they used it as a plot point. The idea was you could breathe it so that your lungs don't compress, so you could do some deep diving.
Right, so you could go deep diving.
This was real. They actually did that. That's not CG. They really did put rats in heavily oxygenated fluorinert.
But don't worry, he's okay.
He's okay. Now, when Ed Harris did it, it was a special effect. Because
Ed Harris would never go through
humans,
that.
Yeah, humans probably...
That would be a frightening experience.
They did testing with it, and what they found out was it would work, but the problem is once you get the fluorinert out of your lungs...
How do you get it out?
You still have what's called the dry drowning. Your lungs would actually pump fluid into your lungs, and then you would die.
Oh, okay. Well, thank goodness that this machine doesn't have lungs, we can do it to that.
Now, we could do it with Fluorinert, which is not as good as Novak, but it's still pretty good at pulling heat away. The problem is, if you buy that, it's about $1,500 to $2,000 a gallon. You could get it for about $300 a gallon if you don't mind it being used.
Which it could have, like...
I would not do that.
Well, you were saying, too, that you want to make sure, before you even attempt this, is to clean the hardware as best you can. Because if there's any metal particles that could float from the surface and then make a connection, you could short that way.
If you go back to the overhead, you probably can't notice from this far away, but I've gone over this computer thoroughly with a soldering brush just to make sure there are no particles hanging out. And also know that if you submerge your computer in liquid, a lot of these things, like these stickers that use solvents,
start to break down.
It's
going to
break
off.
Down and peel off. Right. Mm-hmm. So just be aware of a few things you're going to do now. We know that theoretically, dielectric fluids shouldn't conduct electricity but will conduct heat.
Yes.
We know that, theoretically.
Yes. Theoretically.
Mineral oil
is
a dielectric fluid.
And it's a lot cheaper.
It's a lot cheaper versus $2,000 a gallon. This is $25 a gallon.
But the trade-off is that will retain...
It retains heat a little more, so it doesn't readily give it off. Which means if you want to use this for some extreme cooling, you're going to have a really good radiator.
You're going to have fans and, radiator. Yeah. Okay.
Now, we haven't actually tested this yet.
We've only been drinking.
It's a mild laxative, which explains why we're not so full of it.
It says for animal use only. So should I not have been putting that in Jeff's coffee?
Lubricates the intestinal tract. So theoretically, we should be able to pour this entire container of mineral oil on top of that computer, submerge it,
theoretically,
and it should continue to show us ghosts in the shell.
That's know-how for you. Let's see if it works.
Okay, so theoretically, this is going to work.
Are you going to do the whole thing?
Yeah, why not?
Right.
Okay, here we go.
All right,
I don't want to hit the fan because it's going to...
That's going to...
Yeah, so...
Easy. Easy, Padre. This is so against...
Okay, and go to the wide shot. Are we still showing some anime?
Oh, no, we got some steam coming out, Padre.
No.
No, folks, that is a visual effect. We are okay.
No, okay, here we go.
The fan's going. Even the USB is submerged.
There we go. That is a gallon of mineral oil. Oh, and now this is what I like. Look at the fan. The fan
is still going.
It's actually, so even though the fan is under the mineral oil, it's still, and this is cool, it can agitate the oil because you still need to agitate it to get the heat spread around equally.
Right. That is cool.
Yeah. So theoretically it works, and guess what? In actuality it works. Now, we're not going to put a rat in here.
No.
Alex.
We love rats.
Alex,
too much
we like rats. Okay, now there's a few things that we should say about this. We are actually going to build ourselves an aquarium PC. We're going to do it with a much higher spec motherboard than this.
This is like an
Atom processor. Right. It's barely got enough power to run Ubuntu.
Yeah.
But we're gonna squeeze a lot of power into this thing. We're gonna see how fast of a processor we can get away with without putting any serious cooling. We want it to just radiate through the sides of the tank. The other thing to remember about this is it's cool, but mineral oil is very fine and it stays on everything. So basically,
once you do this,
you're not gonna undo this. Yeah. The other thing is we will eventually put this power supply
in. It's okay to do the power supply too?
Dielectric is dielectric. It's gonna work for AC or DC.
Okay.
The only reason why we didn't put the power supply in here is
because this isn't the finished.
It's not the finished thing.
And this is our test bed.
Yeah. This is our nice power supply and we didn't want to mess it up with mineral oil.
It's still going.
That works just fine.
Nice.
So folks, what you want to do is go home and find your parents' computer.
Dunk it in
mineral oil and tell them Padre SJ said to do it.
Don't try this at home.
Okay. No. I think that's about it for this episode of No... Oh, stop. Alex.
Stop.
When I see that on the screen, I think something actually bad is happening. now, next time, I think we're going to be giving you a little update on our RC project.
Yes.
It's coming along quite nicely. If there's anything from this episode that you need more information about, either the ports or how we did this little trick with the dielectric mineral oil, be sure to go to our show notes. And where can they find those, Brian?
They can find those at twit.tv/KH.
And that's right.
Where all our past episodes live, too.
So. Yeah, exactly. So go ahead and jump on over and find out what we've been doing by visiting our show notes.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you want to do is you want to join our Google Plus page. It's a fantastic place for you to see what we've been doing, what we've been messing around with, but also because we've got 6,500, 6,600? We've got a whole lot of followers who are a gaggle of followers. Who will geek out with you. And they'll be willing to give you a little bit of tippage in case you ever run into a brick wall with one of your projects.
They're able to answer the questions a lot quicker and better than most of the time we do. So.
And you'll find that at gplus.to/twitkh. That's Twit Knowhow. You can also write us an email. Go ahead and send me emails to knowhow@twit.tv. We forwarded all of those to Jeffrey Needles.
Is that what happened with those?
But yeah, that's where they go. And also, you'll find us on Twitter, right? Where are you?
I am at @cranky_hippo.
And I'm at @PadreSJ. Go ahead and follow us. Find out what we're going to do each and every single week. I'm Father Robert Ballas there.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know,
go do it.